Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. You're probably expecting to see Ron Paul in this seat, but Dr. Paul is traveling, so today I will try to keep the show on the rails for us. I am not alone today, however, and I am very pleased that I have as our guest today a senior fellow at the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, Adam Dick, who joins us to talk about his new book, A Tipping Point for Liberty. Adam, can you read me?
Yes, I can. Hello, Daniel.
Welcome to the show, Adam, and thanks for joining us. Now, we've just come out with your book. This is the second book that the Ron Paul Institute has published. The first one, of course, being Dr. Paul's book on war that we published last year. And so we're very excited that this book is out now. And maybe if you can just give us a few minutes of what the book's about and what went behind you writing it. And we would look forward to hearing that.
The book, A Tipping Point for Liberty, deals with a lot of current issues in American politics, from militarism to the drug war to the police state to mass surveillance. But at the same time, it deals with efforts individuals are making to overcome that overbearing government. And that's where the title comes in, A Tipping Point for Liberty. The idea is that even though the government ratchets up its abuses of individual liberty and its interventions around the world with each succeeding crisis, as Professor Higgs explains in his book, Crisis and Leviathan, there's an effort on the other side by individuals to fight that rising government, and that there have been large inroads made. One of the big examples of the challenge to Leviathan that I talk about extensively in the book is the movement to legalize first medical marijuana and then recreational marijuana in the United States. And even beyond that, industrial hemp, which can't make you high, but it was caught up in the drug war all along. And this effort has shown that individuals, along with state and local governments, can challenge the U.S. government and say, well, even if the U.S. government says this is illegal, we're going our own way. And we're not going to send the police after people. We're not cooperating with federal enforcement. And ultimately, as we've seen, what happens is the federal government has to back down. It doesn't have the resources to enforce the drug war without the help of state, local governments, and without the acquiescence of public opinion. And the hope expressed in the book is that this will expand to other areas of the drug war beyond marijuana, but also to other aspects of intervention by the federal government, so that people can regain a lot of the respect for freedom that's been lost over the last few decades.
And, you know, this is the process that Dr. Paul talks about all the time, and that you don't need 50% plus one or the vast majority of people. It starts out with a small minority. It was only a short while ago that it would be unheard of to have medical marijuana available and out there. It would be unheard of to be talking about hemp. And all of these things happen because a small group of determined people and people that have educated themselves continue to push, and it gathers followers and gathers people to say, you know what, this is dumb. It doesn't make sense. And then all of a sudden, just in the few years that since we were working in Washington, Adam, we've seen an absolute sea change in these areas. So there's plenty of good news, and I think you capture a lot of it in your book.
Absolutely. And there's been good news in foreign policy as well, as I talk about the initial planned attacks on Syria by the United States government were stopped when individuals around the country told their representatives and senators, we do not want this to happen. And there was almost a rollback of the mass surveillance program soon after Edward Snowden made his revelations as well, something else I address in the book. In both those instances, the government came back and increased its power in mass surveillance to adopt in the USA Freedom Act that legitimized in the law the surveillance, and in Syria and Iraq with the war on ISIS, that leadership in Congress has said they oppose and would stop, but continue to allow without even having a vote. Nonetheless, the people in both instances have supported decreases in government abuses, and it was only when the government was able to gather its forces and put everything into it that they were able to overcome that. But they won't be able to do that forever.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Adam, that the victories are not absolute. There will be some regression back, and certainly that did happen after the Snowden revelations, and it has happened in foreign policy on Syria. But if you look at concentric circles increasing toward liberty, I think it really depends on people becoming informed. And one of the ways of, and this is one of the reasons why Dr. Paul started the Institute for Peace and Prosperity, is the importance of education. You know, he often says people will go to him and say, what should I do? How can I work for liberty? How can I be an activist? And the first thing he'll tell them, of course, is do what you want. But he'll also tell them to educate yourself, start reading, learn the issues, become better on the issues than your opponents. And that is what, you know, what we've tried to do, frankly, Adam, in the 3 years or so that we've been working with the Institute for Peace and Prosperity. And I think you capture this certainly in your book. But I was interested in asking you, maybe just personally, what were some of the things that you wrote? This is a collection of your writings over a period of time. It's sort of a capsule of history. What are some of the things you covered that you look back and you say, wow, you know, I'm really happy with that piece, or I really nailed that one?
Well, I guess a couple of them are towards the end of the book, where I actually talk about what you were talking about with Dr. Paul, where individuals, one, a writer for the New York Times, and another, actually a person who ended up this year running for the Libertarian presidential nomination, were misrepresenting Dr. Paul. The New York Times person saying that Dr. Paul was calling for chaos and war and the destruction of the economy, and then the fellow who ended up running for president on the Libertarian ticket, didn't win, was saying that Dr. Paul was working with Putin and was a covert Soviet apparatchik. Both these arguments were ridiculous, but people throw them out. They put out 1,000, 2,000 words or whatever, just making these ridiculous assertions. And it was very good to be able to go in and explain how Dr. Paul is the exact opposite, how Dr. Paul wants to have friendship and goodwill with all nations, including Russia, and that Dr. Paul has a very optimistic view of the future. And his optimism is centered in the area of education. While he believes that the United States is headed towards economic problems and that our military interventions around the world are a big cause of that, at the same time, Dr. Paul always says that if we can spread the education, and the education about the ideas of liberty is better spread now than it's ever been before in the United States, then when the problems do emerge, we have the opportunity to offer solutions. And that could be the tipping point. In analogy, Dr. Paul looks at what happened with the Soviet Union, where people weren't expecting that the Soviet Union and the related states would all collapse and their governments would be replaced. But because ideas changed, it happened, and it happened quickly. And the same thing can happen in the United States.
And Adam, you mentioned these episodes with distorting some things that Dr. Paul had said and how you went in and corrected the record. And that became part of the record, your correction. And, you know, I don't want to toot our horns too much here, but I think that speaks a little bit to the reach of what we've done with the Institute over these 3 years. And I know that you've kept a lot of track of the reach beyond just our website, of the things that we write and the things that we curate. And so maybe you can just give the audience a little bit of an idea of how far our work does reach.
Well, I think one of the best choices the Institute made in its founding was to allow other websites and other organizations to reprint any of the original articles published on the Ron Paul Institute website. And as a result of that, when we put up an article, often it'll be republished on 2, 3, 5, 10 different websites, some of which have a larger reach than the Institute itself. So we're multiplying many times the ability of people to read the ideas coming out of the Institute and to affect change through reading that.
Yeah, it's great to see sometimes foreign language publications of our work. It's really a thrill, especially as a writer, to see that. But, you know, Adam, books are written by people, and I think that's kind of a stupid statement, but I think you know what I mean. And so I think your background and your history and your story is also important, what you brought to the Institute. So maybe if you can tell our viewers a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are.
Well, I've been working with the Ron Paul Institute since shortly after its founding. But before that, I was with you, Daniel, over at the Congressional Office of Representative Ron Paul. I was there for almost 10 years. Previous to that, I had run as a co-manager one of the most successful libertarian gubernatorial campaigns in the country. That was Ed Thompson's campaign for Wisconsin state governor. And he won over 10% of that vote in the race. And as a result, the party was also able to appoint somebody to the elections board. There was a state law that said he won over 10%, which they expected only the Republicans and Democrats would ever do. You could have a member on the state elections board, and the state party chairman put me in that position. But I've been working on libertarian ideas for a long time. Back in college, I was chairman of the college libertarian group, and took a semester off of college and a summer to work on the 1992 libertarian presidential campaign. That was 4 years after Dr. Paul's run. And Dr. Paul is what is one of the big motivators for me since 1988, when he first ran as a libertarian nominee. He's been one of the big motivators for me to be involved in politics and in the philosophy of liberty.
Yeah. Well, you know, old 203 Cannon is where we hung our hat for a number of years, so it's nice to still be working together. We're going to have to take off in just a minute, but I would like to chat with you for just a second about something that I know we're both very excited about. And it's a milestone for a small institute like ours, which is that we are holding a large public conference in September in Washington, D.C., in the belly of the beast, to talk about how we can work toward a more peaceful and prosperous United States with a more peaceful and prosperous foreign policy. And Adam, you've been working hard helping organize this conference together with myself and Dr. Paul. And I know you're also excited about what's going to be happening. Can you give us some of your views on what you expect?
Absolutely. I'm very excited about the conference. It'll be our first conference, and hopefully it'll be a success, and more conferences will follow. It's taking place right by Dulles Airport near Washington, D.C. And we chose that to make it easy for people to reach, take a free shuttle from the airport, and the hotel's guest rooms are very reasonable. We have a great group of speakers, including Dr. Paul at the top of the list, but also several other people that you've contacted, Daniel, to fill out the podium during the event.
Yeah, we have Lou Rockwell, who needs no introduction. We have Jacob Hornberger, who's been a great friend of ours for so many years. We have Brian McClinchy, who's just now come to the forefront with the 28pages.org. And we have actually quite a few. I'm going to announce one, I think, within the next day or two, probably filling out our last main speaker slot. And it's someone I'm very excited about. So the conference will be on September 10th at the Dulles Airport Marriott. And we're actually getting close to being sold out. Adam, as you know, we've had to get another section because we sold out the first two sections. So there's a lot of interest. We're all very thrilled. Dr. Paul's very excited. And I can't wait to meet some of our viewers for the show, too. So we're looking forward to that. I hope we'll see a lot of people there. And Adam, I want to thank you for coming on to talk about your book. I hope people will go. It's available on Amazon, A Tipping Point for Liberty. I hope people will check it out. I think they will enjoy it. Nice short chapters, easy to digest, no super heavy theoretical lifting, just a lot of fun and very informative. So thanks so much for joining us, Adam.
Thank you, Daniel.
And I want to thank everyone else out there for continuing to watch the Liberty Report, for supporting what we do. Our viewership is growing all the time, and I know Dr. Paul is very grateful, thankful, and thrilled for it. So on behalf of both of us, thank you very much for tuning in to the Liberty Report.